Welcome to the Barnes Review History Hour. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Saturday, August 5th, 2023. The Barnes Review History Hour is a program featuring contributors to the Barnes Review History Magazine, a bi-monthly print and digital publication dedicated to bringing history into accord with the facts, as well as other special guests. Please do consider subscribing to the magazine if you are not already. Check out barnesreview.org for all the details. And today I'm joined by Taylor Young and Kurt Seidel, two of the leading figures involved with Antelope Hill Publishing. All right, Taylor Young and Kurt Seidel, welcome to the program. How are you guys doing today?
Very good. How are you doing?
Not too bad, not too bad. Thank you guys very much for joining me today. I've been a big fan of your publishing company. It's Antelope Hill Publishing, and the website is antelopehill.com. publishing.com. I also noticed you guys are still on Twitter, amazingly. I know there's been a lot of censorship on Twitter. I follow you guys on Twitter as well, and you guys also have a Telegram channel, right?
Yes, we do.
Okay, yeah, perfect.
We've managed to survive on Twitter. Not really sure how. it seems very inconsistent. I mean, people get banned for seemingly no reason, and other people, you wonder how they've managed to stay on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's I'm kind of in that same boat, although my Twitter page is basically like you have to like directly go to it in order to see anything. I don't pay for the subscription or anything like that, or the blue check mark, and I don't know if I want to even invest the time and energy and money involved with obtaining one, just because you never know what's going to happen. You could be banned, you know, for a seemingly innocuous tweet or not. So there's really it doesn't seem to be too much coherence there, even with Elon Musk taking over. And that's a topic I do want to get into, this whole idea of censorship and the importance of, you know, maintaining print publications and being able to publish printed materials. And since we have, you know, two people on the show, I don't usually do interviews with two guests. Maybe Taylor, you could start off, this is the first time that we've met or talked. Why don't you start off by just telling us a bit about yourself, you know, whatever really you feel comfortable sharing, and talk about your role with Antelope Hill Publishing. And also, could you just sort of maybe also address the origins of the company when it was founded?
Yeah, absolutely. The company started a few years, was it like three? Yeah, about 3 years ago now. Kurt and I were both involved since the beginning. I was previously editor on a number of books. I've since taken on other more administrative roles in the company. It started as you're pointing out. A large part of the inspiration was the desire to preserve history and preserve works that would otherwise be censored, or as well as ones that are just difficult to find or are out of print, or stuff that isn't translated but that is valuable to our people and to the tradition of Western and European philosophy. So some of our first books, one of them was a collection of writings by the Irish nationalist Patrick Pearse. Another one was a translation of Leon de Grelle's Burning Souls, which was actually done by Kurt here, who's on the call. And that was the first ever English translation of that work, I believe. That is one of my favorite books of all the ones that we've done. It's a consistent favorite among our fans and our customers, and I think it's a great representation of what we're trying to do as a company. Is we're trying to bring back to light from the past these works that are difficult for people to obtain or otherwise would be attacked and censored because they contain valuable ideas or stories. In whether someone's story about himself, like de Grelle writing a poetic memoir of his life, history of different political movements in different eras. For example, we had a book early on as well about Oswald Mosley and the British Union of Fascists. It's information that is not always readily available, but when you read it, it's many people find to be very inspiring and very relevant in many ways to our political struggle today. So that's something that we wanted to contribute to with the company. And another part of fighting censorship, like you mentioned, is just you want to have a physical book, right? You want to have something that can't be like a website can be taken down or something like that, or you can lose access to stuff. But if you preserve these things the good old fashioned way in the written word, in the solid physical form, there's a real value to that. There's a real ability to help preserve and history and carry on ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very well said. I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's a very important mission for sure. And, you know, especially with all the censorship that we see today. Kurt, why don't you kind of tell us a little bit about yourself and your role with the company, your history with the company, and sort of, you know, I guess what got you interested in this sort of material?
Sure. So, I mean, I suppose I was always interested in this kind of thing. I mean, I've always, since I was a kid, had my face buried in some history book or biography or something of the sort. So it didn't take much persuasion to convince me to come aboard and start working for the company. And as I think Taylor noted, I did one of our first translation, which was The Burning Souls. And since then, that's basically been how I've busied myself in the company, is with editing and translation. That's just sort of been my wheelhouse. And
can I ask how many languages you speak fluently or you're able to translate?
My German is pretty good, both written and spoken. French, I am capable with translating it, but no, like beyond that, not really very proficient.
Speaking wise, yeah, I can barely speak any French word. So, but no, that's
yeah. I mean, I more or less taught myself when I was doing the translation for The Burning Souls. I had a little bit of like high school French before that, and you know, I leaned on some friends, and of course, you know, Google Translate for certain things that I simply couldn't really grasp myself.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, I actually wanted just to read right from your website the mission, at least the very first paragraph of it. And it says here, Antelope Hill Publishing seeks to ensure history, culture, and revolutionary ideas will be preserved in the written word and made easily accessible, fairly priced, and professionally published. The best refutation of historical revisionists is a clear statement of primary accounts, fighting the battle for minds from the printed page instead of locked away in secret hard drives in foreign languages. Antelope Hill translates, transcribes, and republishes existing works in print and ebook format. We are also looking for authors who will tell the story of the current generation so that we can publish the words that will inspire us to victory. So you've talked about some of these translations that you guys have gone through and republished. You also have a number of sort of independent contributors, right? You know, independent authors that you've also published their works as well. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And I know
lot of interest.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I mean, this is very necessary, obviously, in this day and age. And I know like Scott Howard, for example, I've never interviewed him. I'd really love to talk to him. His books are just absolutely packed with information. Just like, it's incredible how much research that guy's put into some of the books that you guys have published, right? I mean, you guys are the exclusive publisher of his books.
Yeah. Yep. I believe he was,
as far as I know.
Yeah. He was probably like the first like major original author that we got, I think, right?
Yeah. I mean, that sounds accurate to me. I can't.
Because Transgender Industrial Complex.
I hope I'm not insulting anyone by forgetting about them.
Yeah. But no, but Transgender Industrial Complex is another one of our earliest books. And that was also something that we found very encouraging and also very inspiring, that, you know, you have people like this, like Scott Howard, just come to us with this book that is, you know, like, was it like 300 pages? Is just packed with, you know, pure research. And, So the fact that like people with this amount of talent and intellect were, you know, eager to kind of trust us with publishing their works was, I think, something that, you know, again, we found very kind of inspiring and very glad to have been able to kind of contribute that we're able to help give people like him a voice and a platform.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think one of the most important things you guys do is these translations. I mean, particularly for, you know, an American, largely English speaking only audience, right? I mean, there's not too many Americans that are fluent in other languages. So I don't think, you know, most people would never be able to read some of these titles, certainly not in their original language. And then, you know, trying to get them translated on the internet is just, you know, a huge task. So I think just that sort of niche you guys have fulfilled is very, very important.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, having things in English is simply what makes it the most accessible for the greatest number of people. I mean, forget America, the number of people around the world who speak English as a second language and a strong second language makes us accessible to people in France, Germany, Latin America.
Right, exactly. Well, I was also looking at the upcoming titles page, which you can find if you hover over the About section. There's an upcoming titles section on the website, and this is something I wanted to kind of emphasize. You guys do these. Is it more or less like an annual writing competition where you encourage supporters and readers and customers to submit their own essays, you know, focused on a particular theme?
Yes, exactly right. We've done one every year, so this is our third one that's just come out. We announce a different theme for every one. It's open to the public. Anyone can submit, and we go through. We judge all the submissions. We find the ones we like the best. Usually pick one or two winners for poetry, and then for prose, we'll pick one that's the best overall and maybe a couple honorable mentions.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a very, very cool, unique thing that you guys are doing. And I remember purchasing Why We Fight, which I think was the first competition you guys did. And I, you know, it's basically a collection of all the best submissions. Right. And then, so that would have been the first one. And then the second one was the theme was Small Victories. And yep. Then this upcoming one, which has not been published yet, correct?
Well, I believe it just came out.
Yeah.
It just came out. Okay.
The other day, so.
Okay. Okay.
Probably not since you last checked, but yes, it is out now.
Okay. Yeah, I knew that the, the submission period was over with. I didn't know if the book was actually out yet, but the theme is Touch Grass, which is an interesting theme. Yeah.
A little bit of tongue in cheek there, but You know, we wanted people to give. Sort of, I mean, you know, there were different ways that people could interpret that and run with it as either a sort of glorification of nature or, you know, the importance of just engaging with the real world.
Getting off the internet, getting off social media for once. Yeah, no, I totally relate to that. Yeah.
And I got to tell you, some of these submissions were really good. There were some really beautiful ones and some that had me in stitches.
Yeah, I believe it. Can you give us an idea of how many submissions that you're receiving?
Oh man, what was it this like year? 300 to 400, right?
I think we almost hit 400 this year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Some of that was like spam and just junk. Probably about 100 of them. So I'd say there were probably about 250 to 300 actual real submissions.
I think even from the very first one, we probably got in the range of around like 200 submissions.
I think it was around 200. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's a pretty big response. And I could imagine the work involved going through editing, proofreading, and getting getting some of these submissions ready for publication. That's a huge task.
Yeah. Well, the the whole team participates in kind of reading them over and helping determine which ones stay and which ones go and which ones are winners and so on. So yeah, it is a bit of work.
Yeah, no, I believe you. But it's cool. I think it's a really cool concept, a really cool idea, and the Why We Fight book that I have is excellent. So I'd encourage people to check out any of those collections and the annual competitions or contests that you guys do. It's a very unique idea. So moving on, some of the upcoming titles, I'm noticing an emphasis on Russian translations, like books focused more on like Russian history, which I find very interesting because I think that there's a huge void in Russian history, certainly in America. Is this something you guys had planned, or is maybe like the current conflict in Ukraine playing a role in this?
I think, and Taylor, correct me if you know better than me, but I think some of the Russian translations we kind of had them sitting around for a while, looking for translators. And so I think the fact that we have a lot of them coming now is just we managed to find some translators who were capable.
I see. Okay.
I
Well,
mean,
it's
there.
very timely considering what's going on in that part of the
Yeah,
world. Yeah.
absolutely. Yeah, and we published one book actually by kind of
The
on the
foreigner
other
group,
side,
you mean?
the foreigner group by a Swedish volunteer who fought in the Azov group in I think 2014, 2015. So we published that this past year. We've also put out a call kind of basically like trying to get to the other side of the story. We're looking if there's anything kind of comparable from the Russian side specifically in that like period of the conflict before the war itself, where you just had fighting in the Donbass for a couple years. Again, our approach is this is all part of history. It's all part of in this case, like contemporary politics, and there's stories on both sides that are valuable to consider.
Yes, absolutely. And there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation coming out from that part of the world as well. So hearing this stuff directly from people directly involved in the conflict, I think is very, very important. And yeah, some of these ones that are coming up, the story of the Russian land, that must be like a broader history of Russia, I would assume. I've never, I don't really know much about the title. But these translations are all basically just open source. I mean, anybody could translate them into English and publish them if they wanted to. Is that how it works? I was a little actually confused how you guys go about finding some of these titles to get translated and then actually reprint.
Well, it always depends, right? I mean, I've learned more than I ever wanted to know about copyright law in the past several years. And let me tell you, it is a bunch of complete nonsense as far as I'm concerned. But some of these works are public domain in that their copyright protection has expired. Other ones, we have to go and hunt down whoever the copyright holder is. Some of them, it's unclear who, if anyone, even owns the copyright, and that's a whole other sort of gray area that it's necessary that we operate in as a historical publisher. So it gets complicated, is really the
So
best answer I can
it's
give.
like a case by case basis, essentially.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Well, another major theme, I mean, you guys have a number of books related to National Socialist Germany and World War II. I know you have a couple books about, yeah, more or less about Leon Degrelle. Some of them are, direct translations of his writings and whatnot. And there's quite a few upcoming, in addition to some of these more Russian themed books. There's quite a few dealing with German history and specifically National Socialist Germany. In fact, one of the most recent books that I purchased is The Rise of the NSDAP, which is basically like the official history of the rise of the party as told by the SS, correct?
Yeah,
Right.
I was actually a co-translator on that one.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. That book is absolutely incredible, very eye-opening. No matter how much, I read about World War II and National Socialist Germany, there's always so much more to learn and to consider and to learn from, learn the lessons of what these guys went through. It's absolutely incredible. And that sort of leads me to a question I had. I mean, would you consider Antelope Hill Publishing as like a revisionist publishing house? Like, what is your perspective on the concept of, you know, historical revisionism in general, I guess?
Well, historical revisionism, I guess the term always sort of rubbed me the wrong way, because like my concept of history was never that, like, we had this narrative that was true, that was set in stone, that, like, that was in need of revising, right? I mean, to me, all of this kind of stuff, all the things that we're putting out, it's not revisionist, it's just history, right? And, I mean, yeah, do we take a certain stance, a certain side, an angle on that? Yeah, absolutely we do, which is what every historian, everyone who's ever contributed to the field of history has done.
Right, absolutely. Well, yeah, and I tend to agree. I mean, the concept of historical revisionism, or the way it's used, is sort of like a loaded term, because really I view it as basically an attempt to bring history into accord with the facts. I mean, that's basically the motto of the Barnes Review History Magazine. And of course, that's a direct quote from Dr. Harry Elmer Barnes, who's known as one of the first quote-unquote revisionist historians, because all he really did was take an honest look, an honest assessment of the origins of World War I, who was really responsible, what sort of political dynamics were involved, and sort of reassessed the official, very much politically motivated interpretation and historical understanding of World War I at the time, right? So it's basically just applying critical thinking and reason and considering all angles, all perspective in the study of history. And I think if it's presented that way, you know, historical revisionism makes much more sense. But it is sort of like this loaded term. So I understand, you know, I understand where you're coming from. But I think the concept itself, if properly understood, is very, very important, because that's essentially all it is trying to take an objective, honest look and consider all perspectives of all the players involved in a particular, you know, period of history. And, you know, we've seen how distorted and one-sided the official narrative of World War II is, right? So it's important to consider what the Germans were saying. What did Hitler have to say? What did some of the top officials of the NSDAP have to say? So, and it seems like you guys are very much interested in that as well, in publishing a lot of these materials, like this book I mentioned, The Rise of the NSDAP. I know you have some books coming out directly translated from Goebbels, and even some other sort of minor figures like Ernst Röhm, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, yeah, I think that this is very, very important to actually hear out what the Germans had to say, because that's never done in American high schools or universities, certainly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, my whole, like, growing up and learning about this kind of stuff, I never bothered with the things I was presented with in class. Like, I think early on, I mean, you know, I don't know how old I was when I started to kind of figure it out, maybe 14 or 15, but I was already, like, I was hunting down all kinds of other sources on, I mean, whatever 4chan back then was, like, the only thing. And just kind of actually educating myself. I guess I always had some contempt for the academic consensus, if you will.
Right, some contempt and definitely some skepticism towards it. I mean, I agree. I mean, I basically – I don't – see, and when I was growing up, I'm probably a bit older than you guys, but I mean, even like when I was in college, I don't really remember all the Holocaust nonsense being really like shoved down our throats. I think and maybe I'm just, you know, it wasn't that impactful on my education, but I just don't remember that. But it seems like now that is obviously like the focus of anything related to World War II, and you're never allowed to even consider the other side. What did, you know, like I mentioned, like what was Hitler saying? What did he have to say? What was his philosophy? You know, nobody ever allows you to sit down and read Mein Kampf, for example, to consider what he actually had to say, or listen and or read any of his speeches, for that matter.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you know, I think many of us have kind of had that same realization. It's like, well, even something as like benign as like a political speech, or honestly even Mein Kampf, really, right? Because, you know, it's you talk to maybe, for example, like someone more conservatively minded or something like that, it really wouldn't kind of, no one really bat an eye if you say, well, you know, I want to read the Communist Manifesto or something because I disagree with communism and I want to know what it's about. But you don't get that same thing with the National Socialism with Germany. You know, there's just it's completely like absent this idea that you would even try to like understand what you're against or what you disagree with. Yeah, another thing that does kind of talking about this reminds me of is like the way that even kind of, you know, again, like really benign information, like the, you know, lists of like fighter pilot aces on Wikipedia or something, or like, you know, German tank commanders, that's kind of that kind of information is like being actively removed. And it's like, well, it's not even political, really, but it's history. And it's something that can, you know, even something as benign as that can serve sometimes to kind of shake people out of, you know, the kind of frame of mind that's otherwise imposed on them. And it's, again, I think it's, as you're saying, is that that frame of mind is so, so like based on censorship and, you know, so far removed from any kind of what a real examination of history should look like.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I remember reading Mein Kampf for the first time and quickly realizing why nobody wants you to read this book, because he was making very excellent points about virtually every topic he wrote about. You know, so it's like, oh, wow, no wonder they don't want anybody to read this book. I mean, this guy's making perfect sense about everything.
Yeah, no, I've kind of had the same experience multiple times when it comes to stuff from Hitler and from the National Socialists. And, you know, I've had like the thought basically like in so many words that like, oh, this thing that I'm reading or that I'm hearing is like what I believe myself. So like these, you know, they've got to be onto something if like,
right,
I, you know, come to a point of view myself just from like observing the world around me and thinking about politics. And then I read this, you know, same idea, you know, 80-100 years earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I definitely got that same sort of feeling reading The Rise of the NSDAP, which is one of your more recent books, correct?
Yeah, it came out, what, maybe 2 months ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about this book. What was I'm sure you guys have both read the entire thing. I think I mentioned before we started, I haven't finished the entire book yet. But I'm curious, like, what was your big takeaway reading this book? I mean, again, originally published directly by the SS main office. And it's like basically like a firsthand personal account of the rise of the party.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I thought was like the main takeaway, certainly the main takeaway that the original publishers wanted you to get from it, was that the one factor that really determined the outcome in Germany during that time was just like sheer dogged persistence and loyalty to, well, both to a man and to an ideal, and they just absolutely would not be stopped by anything.
Yes, absolutely. I remember reading a book called Why Did Hitler Come into Power, and it was a collection of it was basically like an analysis of different essays written by members of the party, like at the very beginning, explaining why they were sympathetic towards the party, why they wanted to get involved. And that came across very, very clearly, that these guys were so determined, so idealistic, and so loyal, and just would not give up despite all the hardships, all the obstacles thrown in their way. And there were many, many, many obstacles thrown in their way over the course of, oh, I don't even know, 10 years before Hitler finally, you know, assumed the role of chancellor. So, I mean, this is an incredible history that simply is just not presented, largely to an American audience anyways. And not presented in an accurate way, I should say. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it was also very interesting. There was some stuff that I didn't really know about towards the towards the end of the book when they're talking about the like coalition government that basically forms to block them out of power. I knew, of course, that like there had been collaboration between the conservatives and the social democrats against the Nazis, but I didn't actually know like how deep that ran to where they created a coalition together and they basically had their like sort of uniparty chancellor just ruling by decree, like just executive orders banning the party. They had communist paramilitaries just running around in the streets. And the way they eventually broke the gridlock on that was they just refused to participate in the Reichstag, in the parliament, basically until they let Hitler be chancellor. And without them, the country was just descending into chaos. And so, you know, it became this big game of chicken, basically. And that's how the Nazis won, is they didn't blink. They just stuck straight to the path. They said, no, like, no concessions, no compromise. Like, either we take power or no one does, or it'll go to hell in a handbasket.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a very interesting book. I'd encourage people to check it out. And probably the best way to get any of these books is directly through your website. I know you guys do offer some of these titles on Amazon, right?
Yeah, so what we recommend, the website is the best way to buy. Amazon is a slight markup because, of course, Amazon is taking some of the money from that. Really, the reason we have stuff on Amazon is mostly for international customers. The shipping costs will absolutely kill you if you order from the site and it's going to Europe or Asia or, I mean, even places nearer by than that. So that's why we offer them in both places.
Okay. Have any of the titles been censored on Amazon? I'm sure, yes. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Didn't we lose Transgender Industrial Complex?
Yeah, that was probably
Amazon?
The first one. Yeah.
And I think a couple more since then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and see, this is, you know, another topic I wanted to ask you guys about, because this is something that the Barnes Review has been dealing with for a very long time, you know, being banned on Amazon, being shut down on Lulu, which is another sort of independent, you know, publishing company, CreateSpace, which I believe is owned by Amazon, if I'm not mistaken. It's sort of affiliated with it anyways. And even like, you know, Ingram Content Group, which is one of the biggest book distributors and sort of marketing platforms in the world. And they basically have this monopoly on the book industry. It's incredible. So I think it's important to support, you know, publishing houses like you. The Barnes Review, you know, sort of does similar things, and purchase this stuff directly from you guys to support your work, because these other big companies, I mean, totally have a monopoly on this, and they're very much influenced and swayed by groups like the ADL, for example, who like literally dictate what can and can't be said or published. It's incredible. So anyways, I just wanted to mention that, because that is something that, I mean, you guys have dealt with it. Everybody that's in this space has dealt with this in one way or the other. And if they haven't, they will very soon, because, you know, the censorship regime in this country is just on steroids and has been for a long time. And I just don't see it letting up anytime soon.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we've seen this happen multiple times with other companies that are very reliant on Amazon or some other big megacorp provider to transact business, and they get kicked off of there for whatever reason, and that's it. Like, they just close the doors and disappear.
Well, it's crushing if your whole business model is reliant upon it, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on our minds from the start, and we very deliberately set out to avoid that possibility. You know, there's still ways in which the ADL or whoever else, you know, operating through these private sector groups and companies, they can hurt us in certain ways. You know, they have ways to do that, but they can't simply just take us out in one fell swoop. And that's something that I think, like, anyone who wants to do this kind of thing really has to learn, is just basic, you know, making yourself anti-fragile, if you will.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, there was a couple other titles I wanted to bring up, and this one looks absolutely interesting. The Wehrmacht Fitness Manual. Do you guys want to talk a little bit about this? And I'm assuming, have you guys pretty much read all these books that you have on the site that you've published?
Well, not necessarily.
Okay.
there's quite a few editors. We don't get around to reading every single book.
Okay,
someone
I see.
Has read each book.
Yeah, someone.
Right. It's by no means true that everyone has read every book, or for that matter, anyone has read every book.
I was gonna say that would be you'd have your homework. you'd have hours of homework every night if you were doing that. But this book,
Yeah, but the
yeah.
The Wehrmacht Fitness Manual was another one of our early projects, and I think a lot of that material was kind of previously translated, and it was just out there.
Well, it was all, so it had originally been like a crowdsourced project online. I think it was on one of the 4chan boards, actually.
Yeah, I believe so.
And it says here that the Bureau of Mimetic Warfare.
Yeah. that was their collective name. And they just came to us and asked us if we would, print it, make it available as a hard copy for them.
Yeah, I know. It looks very interesting. I'm curious what their, fitness regimen was like.
I mean, it's fairly simple, honestly. Like, it's mostly calisthenics and things like that, which was, of course, like, very popular in Europe in the 20s and 30s generally. That's sort of I've read about this before. There was, like, this Danish guy. I don't know, maybe you've seen this somewhere. Really popularized calisthenic exercise for physical fitness. So it's mostly stuff you can do in your backyard.
Yeah, right. There's also a lot of like kind of group exercises or like group contests of strength, stuff like that. That's helpful
camaraderie building.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I bet it's a good workout for sure. I'm also curious about a book titled Hitler. By Wyndham Lewis. I had never heard of this book until finding it on your website. This is basically like a biography of Hitler by this. I think this guy was a British writer, correct?
Yes. Yeah. It's a British journalist. I think maybe also an artist. I believe he was someone who was kind of more popular in his time, and basically his star faded partly because he wrote this book about the Nazis, and I think it's primarily focused on like the earlier years before the war, certainly. So it's because any look at that period is really interesting, because it's another thing that people are never really taught, as we were talking about before. It's like, why did the Nazis come to power? What were they actually reacting to? What did Germany look like? Why was there any portion of Germany that was interested in what they were saying and embraced them? So it's a very valuable work in that sense, because again, it's a contemporary look from someone in that period, in the interwar period, was looking at Germany and kind of writing as a journalist about the National Socialist movement.
Well, it's also very funny, because Wyndham Lewis has this very classic like English wit in the way that he writes.
Mm-hmm.
So I found it very entertaining, in addition to being very insightful.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. And that was one that I had never come across prior to finding it on your site. I'm curious if you guys could name, and maybe each one of you could take turns answering this, maybe your top two or three favorites that you guys offer. I'm just curious, like, what would be the top two or three that you'd recommend to people?
Okay. Well, number one for me, I won't be too modest. Number one for me is The Burning Souls, the translation of de Grel's like poetic memoirs. I found it really like almost hauntingly beautiful. Like, de Grel had so much depth of soul to him. The way he wrote is just phenomenal. I've been complimented on the translation quite a bit, and I always have to say, like, it's really I didn't put any spin on it. Like, I didn't pretty it up. De Grel wrote that beautifully, and it comes through even in a translation.
That'd be your number one. Okay.
So, You have any more? Should
I thought we were going to take turns here. Okay, what's your favorite?
Okay. Well, my favorite is also Burning Souls.
You got to pick a
different. Okay, so everybody needs to get that book for sure.
Not just repeating the same speech. I think I'll go with my second favorite, which is, and I always like to give love to this book because it's, I think it's one of our more underappreciated titles, but Post by Sean Bell, which is a collection of original short stories. And it is some of the best fiction and some of the, in my opinion, some of the most talented fiction writing that I've ever read. And basically, it's a collection of short stories. The book as a whole is not that long. And a lot of them are allegories or kind of metaphors in different ways for basically the whole many different aspects of the white and most specifically white male experience in America today. So it's called Post with a dash as kind of like post white or post industrial or post, you know, post everything basically. Yeah. Post everything. It's, you know, this is kind of the ruined civilization that we're living in and what does it look like? And I don't really want to talk too much about it because I feel like it would I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but again, there's many different kinds of stories in there. There's kind of like some sci-fi, some time travel. There's some stories about romance, about kind of like growing up, you know, dealing with the failure of authority figures, stuff like that. One of my favorites is I think the second story in the book. It's called The Blue Mountain Trust, and it's basically like a reflection on the spiritual condition of the white race in what appears to be, you know, in some sense, it's twilight in the West. So again, I don't want to talk in too much detail about it, but it is absolutely one of my favorite books. And I think that everyone should check it out and give it a try.
Okay. Very interesting. Yeah. And I was actually, I wanted to bring that up because this is actually a fiction book. And you guys have like a division within Antelope Hill called, is it Jackalope Hill? Which is like primarily focused on fiction books, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, that was another thing I wanted to bring up because, I mean, Antelope Hill is the main, you know, publishing house basically, but there's different divisions, including Jackalope Hill. And then I believe you guys even have a children's.
Yes, it's Little Frog Hill.
Little Frog Hill. Okay, yeah. Yeah, interesting. Okay, cool. So that's the number two book that you both said, The Burning Souls, which I think everybody needs to go out and pick up that book if you guys are both recommending it. And then I'm not sure. I can't tell who's actually speaking, who recommended Post.
That was Taylor.
That was Taylor. Okay.
Yes.
So what about Kurt? What about you? What would your number two be?
My second would probably be Conquering Berlin. Conquering Berlin is really interesting. It's sort of like a historical fiction almost. It's basically a novel. It's told basically from the first person. The first person character is basically a composite character of both the author and also other people that he knew personally. And it details like the life of an SA man in Berlin, and it was around the time in the very early 30s when Berlin was still like the Red stronghold, and they had the party from Munich had basically dispatched Dr. Goebbels to take charge of the situation in Berlin and conquer it for the party. So they were at the sort of tip of the spear of the whole party trying to wrest Berlin away from the Red gangsters, and just taking you through all of their like trials and tribulations. And, you know, there's parts that are sad, there's parts that are funny. It's just really entertaining and action packed and just a really great little novel.
Yes, absolutely. And this is the book that you guys have is this the first ever English translation of this book?
It must have been, yeah. Yeah, I'm 98% confident.
Wow, okay, very good. Okay, and then maybe a third one that you guys would recommend?
There's kind of a lot of runner-ups for me, but I think one that I want to mention is You Gentiles by Maurice Samuel, which is a very interesting book. And it's a reprint that we did, and it's by, so Maurice Samuel was a Jewish author, was very prominent in his day. He received awards in Israel for his literary achievements and so on. And he wrote this book basically as his examination of the historic conflict between the Jewish and the Gentile peoples, and basically he kind of poses the question, is there a solution? How do we work this out? And basically concludes that there is none. And it's a very, very eye-opening book for anyone who's interested in kind of examining that whole question. There's, there's quotes in there that are very, for example, there's a famous line in there. It says, Maurice Samuel is writing, and he says, we Jews, we the destroyers, will be the destroyers forever. Nothing that you can do will ever meet our needs or demands. So he's talking about the way in which Jews interacted with Gentile societies, and kind of giving an argument as to an underlying fundamental and irreconcilable difference, that the Jews are simply different from Gentiles. They have a different spirit, a different way of living that is going to be expressed in everything, and kind of examining the history of our conflict in light of that. So it's a very, very interesting book. It's pretty short, and I think it's really a must read for anyone who's interested in that topic.
Right. Yeah, there's some jaw-dropping quotes from that book. I remember first coming across it. I think I originally saw it on archive.org, just a PDF version of it. And some of the things that he says in that book are just shocking, And I mean, this is a Jewish man himself, one of the most notable writers, journalists of his time, saying these things. So it's quite astonishing. And I know that also includes a foreword by Dr. Kevin MacDonald, who has been a huge influence on my thinking over the years, with his work at the Occidental Observer and the Occidental Quarterly. And of course, he's written multiple books dealing with this subject. So yeah, it's this would definitely be on my list of books to pick up from you guys. This is a classic and a really eye-opening look into the whole Jewish question, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's almost like you said, jaw-dropping. It's sort of like the protocols, except for this, there's not even the faintest hint of doubt as to its, authenticity.
Yeah.
Right.
Kind of calls to mind, I'm sure has been said many times, that there's nothing more anti-Semitic than just repeating what a Jew themselves has written or said.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. I remember listening to the late Michael Collins Piper, who wrote for the Barnes Review for years and also contributed to American Free Press, the, populist independent biweekly newspaper. And he was, also authored dozens of books. I don't even know how many off the top of my head. More than 12, though, for sure. But anyways, I remember first kind of listening to him. He had a radio program on RBN back in the day. And he would just get up there and read quotes and read articles directly from Jewish publications, like the Jewish Daily Forward, for example, or the Jewish Telegraph Agency. And I remember thinking wow, this is incredible. This is coming directly from Jews themselves. And yet if you read it as a non-Jew and point it out and sort of recognize what their agenda is, then somehow you're an anti-Semite. I mean, it was totally bizarre to me. I mean, I had never really read explicitly Jewish publications, but I started to, and it's really eye-opening what they themselves will tell you that they're doing. And a lot of times they will openly admit and boast about their power and influence and their, their overall agenda and their conflict with Gentiles and their almost atavistic, contempt and hatred for Western Christian civilization. It's incredible.
Yeah, and that's part of what Maurice Samuel talks about in the book is comparing like the Jewish and the Gentile spirit and talking about how to, in his view, the, which you know, I think is definitely accurate in a lot of ways, the Gentiles have a very, especially Europeans, which is really who the book is aimed at, have that there's sport is a very important part of our civilization, and not in like some trivial sense, but in the sense that we kind of take joy in the struggle of life, and we kind of like not taking things too seriously, and I think it allows for things like chivalry, which has been such a huge part of the European tradition, and he contrasts this with the Jews. He says that the Jews in contrast are very, very serious. Like we have no time for these Gentile games like honor or a spirit of fair play. It's like if it's either right or it's wrong, and if it's wrong, it must go. So.
Right, yeah, gives you a very good insight into just the different nature, of a Jew versus a Gentile. It's pretty eye-opening for sure, to say the least. So to kind of wrap up, guys, I'm curious, like what is in store for Antelope Hill Publishing? We talked about some of the upcoming titles, focusing more on Russian history and also National Socialist era history. Is there anything that you want to promote or talk more about?
Well, I think the what I would like to take a minute to promote is the fiction line generally, the Jackalope Hill, as you noted, the funny little name we gave it. So I think the fiction line is one of the things that I personally like value the most, giving a voice to modern authors and not just being a history publisher. And we've had a lot of really great stuff coming out. There's been, of course, you mentioned, Taylor, Post, Man in the Mirror, what's the one I'm forgetting?
World Separated. Yep.
And of course, Marty Phillips has published two books with us. The first one, Let Them Look West, was really phenomenal. And then he followed that up with another just as phenomenal book called Millennium, which is really cool. It's four separate shorter stories that sort of, well, he's trying to chart out the millennial experience,
mm-hmm.
What it's like for someone of that generation who grew up in America, and really trying to express that through the fictional medium. So I think that's really important to me. Seems like the historical stuff is really the bread and butter here, but I'm glad that that's given us an opportunity also to put some of the fiction stuff out, and I would definitely encourage anyone who's interested to go check it out, order a few. Like, I haven't read really good fiction almost ever that's been published within the last 20 years.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. No, it's great material. It looks great. The history books is really my main interest. But yeah, the fiction work as well. One book also I wanted to mention. I actually picked up a copy of it. My dad actually got me a copy of it. I mentioned it to him, and he went out and purchased it. It's called let me see if I can find it. Is it the early stories of the American settlers?
Yeah, Thrilling Adventures.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that is just a fantastic book, especially for any – I mean, these are some of the stories I remember hearing about when I was a kid. And this is stuff – I mean, you probably wouldn't learn about any of this anymore or read any of these stories or encounter any of these stories in modern America growing up.
Oh, yeah. No, I like, some of this stuff is sort of like in a deep cultural memory where you'll see like references to it in other forms of like pop culture and media. But like, everyone kind of knows like who Davy Crockett is, or at least that he's a guy who existed and he had something to do with the Old West.
Right. Or Daniel Boone or some of these other American folk heroes. Yeah.
Yeah. Most people, if they know anything at all, kind of like scratch their heads and like, I don't know, wasn't he in Texas or something? Like, and that's true. That is like another kind of really amazing example of
how quickly this stuff can disappear from the collective memory. Because I remember when I was young, when I was a lot younger, I read about that stuff, and I was just a real big reader. So I read a lot of those different stories, but it's kind of passed out of my own memory. And, you know, I definitely is again, something that I don't really like see. Like, I can't imagine that it would even occur to kids today who are the same age I was back then to read that stuff. I can't imagine they would have the same kind of encouragement or, you know, the enough like kind of a cultural reference for an interest in it to even be developed, because it's something that's so de-emphasized or in fact even just like censored and removed from teaching us our own history today in America.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now, I mean, it would be considered racist or white supremacist or, you know, one of these other weaponized, you know, adjectives, you know, to even read this stuff or know about it, right? I mean, it's been basically erased from mainstream American culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, that book in particular.
Yeah, it's a great book, yeah. And it's nice having all this. Yeah, it is. It's a fun read. It's nice having all the stories collected in you know one book that you can sit down and, you know, it's one of those books that you could pick up any chapter, you know, pick it up and just open it up and read any chapter, and it would, you know, be an interesting story to read. So.
Yeah, I think it was definitely in our heads that we were thinking that would be really good for someone who had like a you know, a son of like, you know, probably not real little, but mm-hmm. you know, when they're just starting to get adventurous, right? These would be great stories to read them or
yeah, you know. And we've had a lot of feedback from customers who bought it to do just that and who really love it, and they said, you know, their kids love being read this at like at bedtime or something.
Right. So. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Taylor and Kurt, thank you guys very much for taking the time to speak with me. You guys are doing great work, and I highly encourage all our listeners to check out your website, antelopehillpublishing.com. And as I mentioned, I follow you guys on Twitter and on Telegram, so I'll have links to the website and to your social media. And yeah, keep up the great work. I know you guys got a lot of work cut out for you in the years to come, so keep up the great work. I think what you're doing is very, very important.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. Thank you very much for having us on. I think it's been great to be here. So, you know, very much appreciate it, and great talking with you.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you guys. Appreciate it. You guys have a good night.
Yep. You too.
Bye-bye.